Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service, Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Today's going to be a little bit of a departure from our normal show schedule. One, David Catalano is still out chasing elk, and I have a special co-host in studio with me today. It's my dad, Jerry Evans. Dad, thanks for doing the show with me.
You know, son, as I was raising you as a young child, wanting to put you up for adoption weekly, a couple of times a week, we best do a good show here. No, happy to do it here with you. We got some upcoming hunts together. And of course, we've got some buddies. Dave's out hunting elk, and you can fill me in on that. I talked to Mike at Battleborn Tree Service. He's been down at Table Mountain, where he took his 390 bull I think it was 3 years ago, and he'll be hunting the same unit with his cousin who took that great deer near my property.
That's right, yeah.
Last year, again, first year archery hunting took, I don't know, it could have been 180.
Yeah, it was a good
deer.
It was a really good deer.
It had to be a 180, 190 deer, and he'll probably do the same first time elk hunting with a bow at Table Mountain. But Mike's been down there, and he's fighting, besides the heat, and he's packing in.
Wait, back up, not to cut you off.
Yeah.
He hasn't filled the tag yet.
No, he came home. Where he was seeing so much elk when he was bull elk hunting, he didn't see a thing, finally got some in sight, but it's been hot where they normally are, near what little water there has been. He just hasn't been seeing them, but he's going to go back for the last 4 days of the season. It ends on the 15th year of the month, so he'll go back and put some more time into that. And his cousin, Steve, be down there with him, and Mike will be helping him Table Mountain for the archery bull elk hunt coming up in September.
Oh, okay. And that's what, you know, this first segment here, I wanted to talk about that a little bit. How many times have you heard, oh, that's a lot of work for a cow, when talking about a canyon or a roadless area? Or you've heard, oh, well, it's a cow hunt. And everybody kind of, they not write it off, but they treat it like it's an introductory hunt or like a slam dunk, an easy thing to pull off.
Might be that comparison of versus a bull. For a bull elk hunt, we will do stupid things.
Right.
And test yourself physically to the limit. But for a cow elk hunt, but then again, you're still hunting. And in my particular case in Nevada, I got no hunts whatsoever. So we'll be hunting. We'll talk about our hunt coming up later in Canada. But Mike was telling me, he's gone 8 miles back. This is the wilderness area for a cow elk hunt. And he even questioned his sanity in doing that. But he'll go back. And my guess is he'll fill the tag. And that's Mike from Battleborn Tree Service, one of our sponsors.
I don't know if we can fully dispel the myth. There's always going to be those one-offs every year where somebody, opening morning, cow comes into water, send an arrow through it, and they're done. Oh, this cow hunting thing is easy. But I don't know when that reputation got started that a cow hunt was supposed to be a weekend endeavor or something you do basically from the road. It's easy. Because it never is, at least not in my experience. And I don't know. I'm sure there are. Well, I know there are a lot better hunters out there. However, it's still an elk hunt. And people kind of take it as this throwaway, like, well, it's just a cow tag. It's going to be easy. Or, you know, shoot, I found a bunch of elk for Dave and Pat on their hunt. And they're still out there grinding, dealing with, of all things, sheep. Not bighorn sheep, but domestic sheep. I think I sent you that video. Dave had about 50 or 60 cows at water one evening. In fact, I think it was the evening before opening morning. And he comes up with this plan. They're going to go back in there. It'll be a slam dunk. And that morning, a sheep herder drove his sheep in there. Elk scattered. So I don't know what it is about cow hunts, but everything from the early August heat, the smoke that we've dealt with seems to be increasing over the last decade or so. Just the nature of elk in and of themselves and how scarce they can make themselves. I think cow elk hunts are a lot tougher than the reputation they've earned.
Well, just think back to, it was what, 4 or 5 years ago, we were out in Unit 105, and where we had hunted for bull elk. That's the first place I ever got a tag. And I saw the silhouette of a cow elk head at about 5:30 in the morning. And that's the one elk that I saw in 8 days of hunting.
And all I saw were bulls.
Yeah. So you didn't pass up on the first day, like you didn't have a cow elk come in and say, it's just the first day, I'm going to pass up.
No, God, no.
Wait for a bigger one.
God, no. Yeah. Hey, so let's switch gears real quick. All the rage, the plus peak cartridges. You are the one that pointed my nose in this direction. The Federal Plus Peak cartridges. So it started with the 7 Backcountry. Now it's moved to 6.5 Creedmoor. And the whole hype is, essentially, you can get 6.5 PRC performance out of a Creedmoor. What do you know about them?
I just was listening to Gun Talk. Tom Gresham is coming up after we do our show here today. And he was talking to, had the rep from Federal. And by the way, I glanced across an ammunition aisle in a box store here recently and did not see any of it.
No.
It doesn't make any sense to me. You can't cram more powder into the case itself. So how are you getting it supposedly 200 to 300 feet faster per second? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. And the whole thing is with this alloy, supposedly there's a higher pressure tolerance of the cases or the brass itself. And I'm going, okay, well, that's great. But like you said, the water grain capacity is the water grain capacity. How, you know, are they using some new propellant? Are they, I don't know what's going on there, but here's why I want to talk about these. It's almost, it's getting back to that like 90s thing, you know, before range finders and all that. The goal was to have as flat shooting a rifle as possible, so your yardage errors weren't as significant. And nowadays, I'm kind of going, why are we still chasing the speed thing when more often than not, you've experienced this, I've experienced this. Usually your most accurate loads are going to be in one of those nodes that's, you know, 2 or 3 grains from the fastest or hottest load.
I rarely load to the maximum anymore.
Right.
I typically start below the maximum, and I'm finding myself down to that 2900, somewhat for the 6.5 PRC, right around 2900 to 2950 is about where it's most accurate. So I have been chasing accuracy more than speed for the last half a dozen years or so.
Well, and gone are the days of the 30-06 topped with a duplex reticle. Now everything's got turrets, or it's got a ballistic reticle, and you've got a laser rangefinder. And so it just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand. It might as well be black magic in my world. I don't know what Federal's doing with this stuff, but I just kind of sit back, and I hate to always be a naysayer, but I look at it and I go, well, what difference does 200 feet per second make when I could tell you to the 10th what range something is at? I've got my fancy Night Force scope, or I've got the stadia lines in the reticle. I've got a big exposed turret I can dial. Why do I need, if it's not going to be more accurate, which you're not changing bullet design or rifle design, if it's not going to be more accurate, why chase the speed thing? So here I am, canceling any hope of a Federal sponsorship in the future.
You have put them out of business.
However, it just doesn't make any sense to me, but everybody's talking about it and seems to be the thing this fall heading into any legal weapon system.
It's the shiny new object of this year's hunting season, perhaps. You know, that's the industry, though. Somebody's always trying to build a better mousetrap.
Yeah. Fair enough. And I think if it spurs development, you know, the old rising tide raises all ships. Hey, fair enough. Go for it. But like I said, I don't understand how you can change the alloy of the brass and increase velocity. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Me either. I'm with you on that one. But speaking of shooting and whatnot, we'll talk about some of the guns that we're going to be using. We're going on a moose hunt in Canada. And then also your wife, Cynthia.
Yep.
My daughter-in-law has a sheep tag. By the way, let's go back to Dave real quick, who's hunting with Pat.
Correct.
And again, you know, just think about this. This is my life the last 2 years. As I pulled up goose eggs here in the Nevada application process for tags, is life is not fair. Pat drew a California sheep tag, 3 years ago?
Oh, poor Pat. We're gonna put him on blast here. Yeah, Pat had a California sheep tag, I want to say 4 years ago now.
And who draws another tag this year?
Yeah, Pat's got another sheep tag.
Another sheep tag.
In a very desirable desert unit.
Yeah, and a cow elk hunt tag as well.
So correct.
If you know Pat, see Pat. Next time I see him, I'm going to rub his head.
Good. Good. He deserves it. Hey, on that note, let's go ahead and take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you missed that first segment, or if you missed an entire Sunday, you can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. All the past episodes are there. And you can also go to Apple Podcasts, just search for Nevada Backcountry. All right.
This segment was phenomenal. You need to go get it. I can't believe how good it was. We gave away that hunt valued at over $50,000. It was just audio perfection.
That'll be in the best of that we have to run at some point during our hunting season, because we have some hunts coming up. Over the break, we started talking about guns and what we're going to use on these upcoming hunts. And I shushed you rather rudely because I don't know what you're taking on this moose hunt. So I want a genuine reaction here. I'm either going to walk out or I'm going to laugh. What are you using?
Same thing as I did the two previous use, plus.
Perfect.
Plus. Perfect. And here's the plus. I'm going to take my bow.
Yeah. Oh, you are.
I am. I've taken two moose 2 years in a row with a 6.5 PRC 142 grain ELDX bullet. Mm-hmm. First year, two perfect shots, one bad shot on one moose, and it dropped at the third shot. First moose hunt, off sticks. I'm not sure. First shot was perfect. Second shot could have been the bad one, way at the back into the hip. But there were two shots that would have been perfect, and he would have dropped eventually after the first shot. But when your guy is telling you, shoot another.
Yeah.
And they're not running like an elk or a deer would. They're walking,
trotting,
which is practically like a run to a deer or elk. Moose are awfully big, and they move fast. And then next year, one shot, 153 yards. That one did bolt after I shot it.
Spun and ran back into the tree line, didn't it?
No, it went right down the muskeg or the bog.
Okay.
Even though the vegetation was only like 3 or 4 feet high, it was kind of hard to find. But we did find it, and it only went about 40 or 50 yards.
I had to watch that one on video because I was off by myself while you guys were having all the fun.
Freezing in a tree stand.
Yeah.
I remember the first year I went up, and Will, my other son, asked me, are you sure, is it okay to take that cartridge?
A 6.5 PRC?
Yeah. And there's no restrictions or regulations in Alberta as far as what type of gun. I mean, obviously, you're not going to take a .223 up there to hunt moose, but
they probably have the same big game stuff we do in Nevada, where it's like must be larger than .22 caliber or whatever.
So it performed great, perfectly on the second moose. So I am taking the gun, but I am going to, it's the challenge of, remember, originally I wasn't even going to be hunting moose. I was going to go up with you guys and hunt whitetail and wolf. Our outfitter, Josh Zarichny, who will be on the show next week with Henry, moved the hunt. He is so motivated because of what happened to you 2 years ago to get you a moose and to get all of us a big moose.
Good.
Because they are bigger. We're right up near the Northwest Territories.
Yeah, right on the border there. And I know he had moved the unit, and I didn't know. You've been communicating with him a little more than I have. I'm not exactly sure why. I think he thought our odds odds of getting three or four moose out of there yeah. was better up in that part of the province.
Right. He got four tags. I grabbed three of them. And so I'm going to be hunting moose. Woe is me.
Yeah, bummer.
And we'll see what happens. There was a fourth tag available. He thinks he may have had it sold, but by next week when he's on the show with you, he can let you know as to whether or not that tag is available. And I might suggest, you know, if you want to be a part of the Evans clan and be in our hunting camp, we participate in open palm fighting, wet t-shirt mud wrestling regularly.
Masked and unmasked nude horseplay.
And preferably around a big swarm of bees.
Yeah. No. That would be awesome if a listener came on the hunt. I don't know. I'll ask him next weekend whether or not he's got that thing sold yet. Back to the gun thing.
Okay.
You've got a new scope this year.
I did go with Night Force. Again, it's that old saying of only a rich man can afford cheap merchandise. Buy once, cry once. I'm switching to Night Force, but I'm also eliminating I'm getting rid of a lot of these guns and optics that I've had over the years that sit in a safe. So Night Force, and I've got to get back to Jim's class to get this dialed in. I've got those Sig Sauer 10 kilo binos. So great rangefinder bino. Glass is not as good as glass can be, but the range finding is phenomenal. And so I just got to get that all dialed up with my scope. And so if I'm using the clicks to go up, but we're moose hunting. So hopefully with a bow, I'm within 40, 50 yards of a moose.
Well, during the rut too.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. But even during the rut, the previous hunt, the most we could get this thing to come in from 800 and something yards was 278 yards.
Oh, okay.
And it was like the standoff at that point. He wasn't coming any closer. We weren't going any closer to him, and that's how I took that one. But so that's the challenge of if I can get a moose with a bow, I'm going to be—
That'd be awesome.
I'll be proud of myself.
Yeah. Now, did anybody in camp that year get a moose in close?
In our camp, obviously, no. We were the only two hunters.
No.
The previous one.
Yeah, because that was a rut hunt. The hunt you and I went on was a post-rut. And boy, that was a lot of work for not a lot of moose. So the previous year, when you went during the rut, you always see those videos of like a moose coming in through the alders and he's right there in front of the hunter. Did anybody at your camp experience that?
There was only one other hunter. He was from North Carolina, East North Carolina, if that makes any sense. And he took a smaller moose, as I'd call it, a cribbage board moose.
Yeah.
and unfortunately, because he wanted the big moose, and I didn't care because I had to get to another. So I would have gladly taken—
You had an elk hunt.
Yeah. I had another hunt to get to, so I would have taken anything. As it turns out, I took a bigger than average for the area.
You took a very good moose.
That was, and then the one that I took the next year was wide, but it didn't have much in terms of paddle.
But at this point,
I'm, like I said, I'm just happy to be able to go hunting with my sons in Canada for moose, because there is that feeling when you walk up, even if you've taken elk, deer, or whatever it may be, or in our case, buffalo as well, bison.
Oh, yeah, bison, yeah.
But when you walk up on a moose on the ground and you just stare at it for a few minutes and go,
good grief.
Call in the butcher.
Some
help, because it is a day-long process to get a moose ready to get to a processor in Canada. So I'm excited about that. But in terms of that, the willows are there and you're calling in the moose and you're 40, 50 yards away face-to-face with a moose with a bow. We'll see if that happens. That would be awesome. But I'm not going to be, if it's 150 or more out there, could you hand me my gun? I'll probably just have my bow on my backpack and carry the gun.
Do you know what Will's shooting there? Will, your son, my brother.
300 Winchester Magnum.
Okay.
He's got that Sig Sauer gun that he picked up that's awfully accurate.
Yeah. In fact, that's what he was shooting this last weekend when we went out. Goofy looking thing. I like the walnut stock. I think those are pretty looking rifles. However, what he's shooting is that chassis thing.
Yeah.
Looks almost like an AR. What is that? A Sig?
I forget the model, but it's got the folding stock, which is great for a smaller gun case.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or throw it in a backpack when you're hunting.
But he was getting amazing groups out of that with factory ammo, as you did to transition to your gun.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing you had on the other moose hunt. This time you'll hopefully use it, the 7.5.
7 PRC.
7 PRC.
7 PRC, yeah. And quite literally, I would have taken a 7 mag. I like 7 mags. However, those Seekins, now they're not even doing 7 rem mag. They're just doing 7 PRC. So it wasn't like I bought the gun for the cartridge. It was simply the gun I wanted. But I'll tell you a quick anecdotal story, because I've got a Night Force too, and I think I sold you on Night Force. Do you remember that antelope hunt years ago?
Yes.
And we got there, checked my zero, loophole scope. It was 3 feet off. And that was the most frustrating. Do you remember that? Checking the zero on that box at camp. And it was like, you're not even on the box, Henry. That hunt and getting out there and the frustration of having a gun dialed and then a rifle bouncing around in a case in the back of a truck and getting out there and not even being able to hit a 2-foot by 3-foot box at 100 yards. And I went, man, something is wrong. Well, finally, after that miserable, hot, brutal, laying in the sun weekend of chasing antelope, get home and check it. And the scope had shifted again. And it was not an inexpensive scope. It was a Leupold. One of their, I don't know if it was a VX5, VX4, whatever it was. And after that hunt, I went, I'm done with this nonsense. And shout out to Rockslide, the forum, Backcountry Hunting Forum. They do a scope test on there. They drop them, they run box, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Night Force consistently was the brand that performed and always passed every test. And he'd always remark, you know, at the end of the test, he'd say something or type something like, as with every other Night Force, this one performed flawlessly. And it's not paid for by Night Force. And that was kind of the final. I went, man, I hate getting out there. I can't zero a rifle. The scope's all bunged up. I had a similar experience in Texas with a scope that was shifting on me. And I went, I'm at a place in life now. I don't want to do this garbage anymore. I'm just buying a Night Force.
Well, unsolicited advice, and probably some of you have already experienced this, but because I did, and I missed the antelope of a lifetime by stupidly having my rifle on my rifle carrier on my quad, you know, those ones that you put on front and the cargo area, and it bounced out. I missed the, again, antelope of a lifetime. Went home, went to the range, put out a target at 100 yards, and couldn't hit the target. And I never put my rifles, even in a hard case, in the back of the truck. They're in the cab with me. I've got the one of those rifle carriers behind the seats. I just treat it like a baby. I don't know if you remember that time that I had those Vortex binos on that hunt in Montana. And remember, I couldn't focus them in.
Oh, yeah. Cheap glass.
Great service from the company, but you don't need it if you've got that quality to begin with.
Night Force, et cetera.
So I'm Swaro Bino, Swaro Spotting Scope, Night Force Optics on the rifles. That's pretty much all you need to do. Buy once, cry once, as you say. If you got a couple of different guns that you use on different hunts, buy a Night Force. And then if you're going to switch to a different rifle for a different hunt, it's not that much work to take the Night Force off this one gun, put it on another, get it zeroed in with that, and be happy with it.
No, hey, we have got to go to break here. We're running over. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Sincere thanks to all of you who take the time out of your Sunday to listen. Give you a perfect example. I love Brad and Christy and Wyatt, your neighbors. Mm-hmm. I always get texts from Brad, and his son Wyatt was rocking the Nevada Backcountry hat on a fishing trip to Alaska recently. So I'm glad they're getting out. I know Brad's going to listen to this. I love his feedback always. One thing we never covered on the show was when Brad sliced open his thumb. Oh, wow. We were going to do a safety episode, and then I tried to show everybody that picture, and nobody wanted to see it. And I'm going, oh, look, his whole thumb's peeled. Nobody wanted to see the picture, and then it just kind of died on the vine. But thank you to all of you who listen and send me emails, text me, send us messages. Sincerely appreciate everybody who listens.
Well, you just opened up another potential topic for a couple of minutes because Bear was just trapped next door.
Brad sent me.
I woke up two mornings ago, big bear tracks across my deck. I have a pond, so I think it had walked through the pond and then tracked the mud over the deck, and that's probably the bear that was trapped. And I did a news story earlier this week on the Noon News about bears and all the problems in Tahoe and in California in particular. Over 600 incidents of bears breaking into homes. We've had 100 and something here in Nevada. And I went back to some of those quotes on how it was going to be the end of the world as we know it about bear hunting if we opened up bear hunting 15 years ago. And look at it now. There are so many bears. And one thing that I have been harping about for the last half a dozen years is having a spring bear hunting season. Since I'm on the topic, we'll continue on, but I do want to step back to Trijicon and scopes and some of that stuff.
Real quick. So over the break, I asked you if you had checked the zero on that rifle from the antelope hunt with the coloscope on it when you got to camp before it went on the ATV. You said no. So there's no telling when that thing actually got knocked out, because riding on the front of an ATV should not knock a scope off.
Oh, no. On those roads up in the Eugenes, it's rocks and everything, and your teeth are rattling, let alone the scope. So I'm pretty certain
that's when it happened?
Yeah, and I sent it back, got it all taken care of. I think I still have that scope on a rifle. But that was the
frustrating
of a lifetime. And I won't go into great detail about that, but he literally walked toward me after the first shot, and I thought I'd get closer. Instead, it started coming closer to me. It was probably 80 yards across a little draw from me, and I missed that thing.
Ouch.
But you talked about the drop test that Rockslide has done, and Vortex not coming out so well on most of those tests. But
Vortex, Leupold, Swarovski, Collis, I mean, you name it.
One that has a great, I'm not sure if they've tested it, but Trijicon.
They have, yeah.
And how did that work?
The Trijicon Credo was one of the ones that passed. That and the SWFA scopes tend to do pretty well. But it's not just a drop test. It's also a return to zero, and then a box test where they'll make sure, hey, if this thing says it's a, you know, quarter inch adjustment at 100 yards, well, if I click it 8 times, my impact should move 2 inches. They test all of that stuff.
Yeah. On with the show, as they
say.
So we talked about bears. We finished up on the scope.
Oh, I'll tell you about bears real quick. Interesting conversation I had over the 4th of July. I was up in Jarbidge. Ironically, here's how most good stories in Nevada start. I was at a bar in Jarbidge, and I ran into...
Wait a minute. And the bartender said, why the long face?
Yeah, exactly. No, so there was a retired Wyoming game warden there. Oh. And we got talking about bear hunting and everything. And he went down the path of... And we were talking about bears getting into towns and all that. He looked at me and he said, hound hunting. If you don't allow hound hunting... And I won't, we've gone into it on the show before, but all the reasons to hunt bears with hounds. But he was saying, even if you have a hunting season, so if you get picked off on the outskirts of town, doesn't keep them out of town. If you are running hounds for bears, 9 times out of 10, it is going to keep the bears. They do not have positive memories
of
interactions or dogs barking, et cetera, et cetera. So he said that's... Guarantee you look at a state that doesn't allow hound hunting with bears in towns, they're going to deal with bear issues. And I know you deal with bear issues at your house, but I would not call where you live being in a town.
Right.
So,
and we know what happened in California. But just to get back to Nevada, the problem we have now, and again, especially when there's going to be a drought year, you pretty much know it's a drought year. by February or March or by April. When does our draw end? In May?
Yeah, May. Oh,
okay. So you know there's going to be a drought year, so you know there's going to be problems, especially where I live at the base of the Sierras in the Carson Valley. Why not do a dozen tags? I think it was 3 years ago, the other previous drought year, there were at least 6 to 8 bears that were trapped and are euthanized. And the process is, if a bear breaks into a home or a garage or whatever, Nevada Department of Wildlife will come in and take DNA from the bear. Mm-hmm. If that same bear breaks into another house, or if there's an interaction, a negative interaction with humans, and that's that same bear, they'll trap that bear and they'll kill it. They'll euthanize it. So those of you that are anti-hunting, why are you so anti-hunting when the bear could be put to good use? It would raise money for conservation. People would pay to do a spring bear hunt in Nevada. And that's something the commission should certainly look at, is if it's a great year for bears and they're going to stay up higher in the spring and summer, then don't have one. But when there is one, call it. And when there's a drought, a severe drought especially, there's going to be a whole lot of negative interaction between humans and bears. And your Wyoming game warden is exactly right about dogs and hunting bears with dogs because of that interaction with bears. They have a memory. And if they associate barking dogs with being treed, they will not hang too close to houses with dogs.
Well, back to your previous point on the bear thing, why don't they? Because hunters, myself included, are the silent majority on most of that stuff. And who gets their say more often than not? The bear people, the bear league.
The anti-hunters.
The anti-hunters, the lunatics. I saw it at the commission meeting where I presented the 80% let off, getting rid of the 80% let off bill. You would be amazed at how many, and I'm going to do my thing that I always get in trouble for, white women. Every caller or person that joined over the Zoom, I could picture her from her voice sitting there with her cats, and they're vocal and they're active and they get involved. Getting bear hunt stuff changed is like dealing with the horse issue.
Are you inferring that these women are somewhat unattractive and maybe don't have a social life, and that's why they spend so much time trying to make life miserable for somebody else? You wouldn't say that,
would you? I would say that they are probably right up Graham Plattner's alley.
Should I use the... you mean the guy who's been slamming ham throughout New England?
Oysters are an aphrodisiac. No, I mean, it was eye-opening to me at how active... these groups are, and there's definitely a type that participates in this stuff. However, so back to your point, why not open up a new bear hunt thing? Look at Carl Lackey. Yeah, I mean, taken to the cleaners, great human being, great advocate for wildlife, has done more than anybody for bears in the state of Nevada, and I mean, lost everything.
Was doxxed.
Doxxed, lost everything, having to defend himself in court against lunatics from the Bear League.
Yeah.
So
here's where the term is accurate and not in a facetious way. Life's not fair. Certainly not for Carl Lackey, a great guy as well. Hey, we need to go to the fourth segment. We got three or four things we want to get to. There's a public land comment hub with Onyx that just came out, and also a little bit of news regarding wolves. I'll leave it to Tom Gresham, but some great victories in courts with firearm regulation. You mentioned you got a couple new suppressors.
I did. Yeah. We'll cover that on the, my favorite, final segment of Nevada Backcountry. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. You're listening to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, and the show is Nevada Backcountry. Special co-host today, my dad, Jerry Evans, doing the show with me. I'm trying to think of any other demographic groups I could alienate and insult on this final whole segment.
We only have about 8 or 10 minutes.
So. Oh, okay. So I won't go down my list, but I get a little fired up about the bear thing and the horse thing, and there definitely is a type on that. But I want to thank our show sponsors real quick before we get to the meat of the matter here. Thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy. Now you were gesticulating wildly in the corner. What were you going to say, Dad?
Well, you said bear, you said horse, wolves.
Oh, wolves. Yeah.
Old radio people tend to polish their halo and talk about their glory days. But when I was doing the show for SCI, it was 08 or 09 when they took wolves off the delisting and they were huntable again for the first time. And I remember interviewing the guy who took the very first legally hunted wolf in Idaho.
Oh, cool.
I forget his name, but wolves are certainly an issue around here. And then there's some negative news, as there always is, because they never give up. The anti-gunners, the people that want to ban hunting. But we do have somewhat of a positive story regarding Oregon. But real quick, I didn't have a whole lot of time to get into the press release from Safari Club International regarding wolves, but it's not positive.
No. It was struck down. Basically the bill, or they wanted to delist the wolf, get it off the ESA, the endangered species thing. And that was struck down. And I, like you, I didn't dig that deeply into it. I kind of surfaced, glanced at it and looked it over and kind of just rolled my eyes. And you're absolutely right. It's those are the, we'll call it the holy trinity of the anti their crusade. It's wolves, bears, and horses.
Well, it was a Senate bill that was spearheaded by Ron Johnson. And once again, as we, you just spoke about them, it was, of course, it was an avid hunter, conservationist, a person that has spent many of their decades in the outdoors and observing wildlife, Mr. New Jersey, Cory Booker, that killed it. Again, another one of the ignorant urban dwellers that know nothing about what they're talking about. They are so stupid, they're dangerous. They're dangerous for people, they're dangerous for wildlife.
Yeah.
But a positive in that Oregon had this anti-hunting measure, and it wasn't just anti-hunting.
And see, I didn't even hear about this, so lay this out.
It was the banning of hunting, of fishing, of poisoning rodents, of doing anything to any living creature, except humans. You can always abort babies, but...
I shouldn't laugh, but you're absolutely right.
And it was not the first time it came around, but it looked like it was going to make it, and it eventually failed. And right now, although I don't think they'll have much success, Republicans, what few there are in the state of Oregon, are proposing a state constitutional amendment to protect the right of hunting in the state of Oregon. And one of the
similar to Oklahoma, right?
Oklahoma didn't have any problems with the anti-hunters.
No, but they've basically enshrined it in the state constitution as a right of Oklahomans to hunt and fish.
At last count, way back when I was more involved in doing a show like this on a weekly basis, there were 41 states. If you were capable and legal, you have a state constitutional right to hunt. Last count, 41 states.
I don't believe Nevada does.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. There are lots of things about Nevada. I wish they would look at other states for a better example of how to run the state, including the wildlife department. And then there are lots of things in Nevada that a lot of other states do not adopt, which are positive for the state of Nevada. I must say that because I live here.
Yeah. So Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were they? What was the anti-cause there? They wanted to ban what now?
It was basically the killing of animals.
Across the board?
Mouse traps. One of the reasons why it failed is because the Indian tribes were against it. Wait, we fish to eat. You've heard of the Columbia River?
Yeah.
We get a lot of sustenance from that. So it failed.
So just a blanket, no killing of animals?
And no killing of anything. I'm surprised it didn't include insects.
That
was maybe next.
Portland is slowly re-entering the Dark Ages, but like the bubonic plague, we should probably control rodents. Just from, you don't want to hunt big game, fine, don't hunt big game. But how about just a little rodent control before you completely turn into a cesspool?
Well, there is a constitutional amendment that's being proposed by Republicans and Republicans only in the state of Oregon that would guarantee fishing, hunting, and farming. That's the other thing I didn't mention. They were even going to ban a lot of farming. Again, it's like, in other words, animals. You can't raise animals. You can't raise cattle. And
perfect.
There's the
perfect.
Old Albert Brooks parody thing of a talk show that it goes way back to the 70s of a caller calling in and saying, yeah, the woman who called in earlier about the ecology and save the whales and save the trees. What are you going to build your house out of? Meat?
Well, yeah, not in Portland.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, farming was also going to be banned.
Ah, perfect.
But it got close to being on the ballot.
Oh,
and being
I'm sure
passed,
it did. So, yeah.
All right. So just to wrap up the show here today, thanks for enjoy doing this. I wish I'd had a little more time to prep for it, but we got to talk.
You and me both.
Got to talk about our upcoming hunt. That'll be in October. And listen to the show next week. Because Josh Zarichny, a guy that Henry and I hunted with, he was working for another outfitting business based out of Calgary. He bought his own business. And boy, if you want to hear a story about how tough it is.
To do business in Canada.
What was he paying for his truck insurance? $7,000 or $8,000 a year. And he was just explaining how hard it is to get ahead in Canada. So he bought his own outfitting business, did real well last year, his first year. So we're going to hunt with him, and he's a great guy. There may be a tag to be in hunting camp with us, me, Jerry Evans, Henry Evans, and Will Evans, because there was a fourth tag available. He thought he may have it sold, but by next week you should know, and that would be a great opportunity. And it'd be fun to take somebody from Nevada up there with us. And,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You would have to do certain chores for us at certain times of the day.
I'm much more pleasant in person.
So that, we've got to get back into Jim's shooting course before we head up there and just make sure we're all dialed in with scopes and rifles.
Yep.
I'm using, by the way, the Howa 1500, which I used on those two previous.
That is right. Yeah, yeah.
Just got a new scope on it, though, the Night Force, so I got to get that all dialed in. And you guys out there with tags, don't give up by next weekend.
Supposed to clear up,
Upper 70s for the highs.
Oh,
so
very
I can
nice.
Feel fall in the air. When I saw the big giant skeleton at Home Depot this past week, I thought, yep, fall's in
knew
the air.
It was coming.
It's 104 degrees, but So anyway, thanks for having me here on the show today. And thanks to our sponsors for sponsoring Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM. Tom, give them a quick plug.
Shooting Performance Institute. That is the gym you keep mentioning.
I'm on a first name basis with it.
Shooting Performance Institute, Truck Envy, Rightful Liberty Arms, Battle Born Tree Service. Coming up next is Gun Talk on KKFT and KSVL.